About 16 years ago, Shawnee and I lived in a little house in town, and it was one block away from where I went to work. Kind of convenient. Of course, gas wasn't $4 a gallon at that time, but I would walk to work. And it was just one of those things that you got used to. You walk back and forth to work. Well, I had this blonde-eyed, blue-haired little girl that every night she would stand in the window, watch Daddy walk home from work. And that was kind of a joyful thing for me to see my little girl. And she'd beat on the window and press her face against it. You know, it was exciting for her to see Daddy come home. And she was looking forward to an evening with Dad and hugs and kisses and playtime. And those days have gone by now. 16 years goes by pretty fast. She'd watch intently and listen to Dad as I would unlace my boots on the back porch. And I would talk to her about what she had done with Mom that day. And kids don't miss a thing, you know. And before I would go into the house to see my wife, I'd reach into my pocket and grab that circular container. I'd take it out and I'd throw it in my work boot. I had a habit. I chewed tobacco. And I took that out and I threw it in my work boot to see that was my hiding place for that. And that's where it stayed unless I was out away from the family or whoever I might be. I went inside and I would say hi to Shawnee and look around for Brianna. And where did I find her? On the back porch, her mouth stuffed full of chewing tobacco, tears streaming down her face and gagging. My hiding place wasn't such a good hiding place, was it? I knew that I was the only one that was responsible for the mistake that she had made of getting into something that had become my addiction. I had to clean it up and I had to face the facts that this was a problem and something had to be done. I knew that I had a bad habit, but I never really considered it an addiction. You know, people that were addicts were addicted to cocaine and meth and even alcohol. But truthfully, my little habit of chewing tobacco had become an addiction. Romans, the 6th chapter and verse 16 says, "Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey?" My desire to chew had become stronger and stronger every day that I continued doing it. It was to the point that I was dipping in secret when I was around my wife even. She probably didn't know that, or maybe she did and didn't let me know. Got to the point where I didn't spit anymore. I just swallowed it. Didn't bother me a bit. I was addicted. It was so controlling that I found projects to do outside or in the garage just so that I could go chew. I continued to hear James 4:17 repeat in my head day after day after day. "Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." I was addicted to chewing tobacco. And it had become a sin to me because I knew that it was not good. And I didn't do anything about it. It was time that I quit hiding my addiction and do something about it. Past 3 weeks I've spent studying addictions. I don't know why. It was just something that came up to me. And in my personal Bible study, I thought, you know what, I'm going to study and then I have an opportunity to share that with you today. Because I have overcome not just one, but numerous addictions in my life, and we all have too, I'm sure. So let's look at what God says about addictions, and Lord willing, we can improve our own lives based upon God's encouragement to us. Here's some facts and figures. 27%, let's just say 25%, because 25% would be one quarter of our congregation, but 27% of Americans at some point in their lifetime will become dependent upon some substance. So one quarter of us in here is very possible that we will become dependent upon something. Not necessarily illegal drugs, not necessarily alcohol, but something. And we'll get into more in depth into what that might be. Not including pornography or gambling. You throw that mix in there, and I don't know what the percentage would be, but not including pornography, or gambling. In 2010, 22.6 million Americans, or 8.9% of the population, had used illegal drugs. And if you know anything about illegal drugs, more than likely, when you use it once, you're hooked. You're addicted. And you're going to go do it again and again. Since 1980, deaths related to drug overdoses have increased 540%. In 2011, 56.8 million, or 22% of the population in America, smoked cigarettes. Throw all them people together and let them smoke at one time, it looked like a forest fire. 600 billion, that's B as in baloney, $600 billion annually is spent in costs related to crime, related to lost work productivity and health care as a result of people having addictions. $600 billion. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 8. In the ESV, it says, whoever makes practice of sinning is of the devil. If you want to go there, let's continue reading that. 1 John chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. He who sins is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whoever has been born of God does not sin, for his seed remains in him, and he cannot sin because he has been born of God. Whoever makes practice, whoever's addicted to something, practice over and over is of the devil. There's sin that dwelling within the man. I'm not saying that we're the devil because we have some sort of a habit or an issue that we need to take care of in our life, but the devil is working within us whenever it comes to that sin, or it comes to that addiction. But thank God that Jesus Christ was manifested, made known, and came that we can overcome any of those addictions that might be in our life. To define and understand addiction a little bit better, consider a couple of these things. An addiction is a worship disorder. Instead of worshiping the divine king, addicts worship idols that temporarily satisfy a desire. Let's do that again. It's a worship disorder. We're worshiping something instead of the king. And it becomes an idol that temporarily satisfies a physical desire. Instead of filling ourselves with God, we're filling ourselves with other things that make us feel good, make us have some sort of a high, gives us some sort of a release. And we continually do it over and over because we're lacking something. An addiction is a form of bondage. It's a form of bondage that you voluntarily sign up for. More like, oh, just one time. I'll just try that cigarette one time. That's okay. So addiction is a form of bondage that you voluntarily sign up for, and then you realize that you got something that you didn't want. It's got you. It's bound to it. John the 8th chapter and verse 34 says that whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. Bound to it. A slave is bound to it. That sin that you're committing in an addiction binding you to that thing. Being addicted to something that makes you slave to an idol that now has control over you. It is now controlling you. Just like my habit of chewing tobacco that I thought was just a habit, but it was an addiction. It had control over me. I was finding reasons to go visit my idol. I found reasons to go play around with my idol because it made me feel better. I think that the Bible speaks volumes whenever it comes to addictions. And there's good teaching there for us of how to recognize them, what they are, and how to overcome them. So turn with me to Ephesians, the chapter, the fourth chapter. In verses 17 through 32. I haven't included all my thoughts or all my study in this talk, but I've pulled out some things that I think are good for us and necessary for edification. Ephesians 4, 17 through 32. Let's read this and then some thoughts come with it. This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard Him and have been taught by Him as the truth in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Verse 25, therefore, putting away lying, let each of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Christians have a higher standard of life that we live than when we were non-Christian or Gentiles or before Jesus came into our heart. And so it's necessary for us to recognize some of those things that may be pulling us away from God. It may be challenging us to walk a life that is not of Christ. Addictions can be more than substance abuse. It can be more than alcoholism. It can be more than drug abuse or cigarettes. And probably more than likely, most Christians don't have issues with these. Lord willing, I hope that's the case. But there are other things that we can become addicted to as Christians. There are other things that can pull us away from God and become our idols. It could even be work. It could be entertainment. It could be play. It can be games of some sort. Whatever it might be that is keeping us away from God can become an addiction to us. So here we see Paul encouraging the brethren at Ephesus to put away some things. Starting there in verse 25. First one is lying. Put away lying. I believe lying can become something that you're addicted to. Have you ever met somebody that continually lies? One lie after another to cover the other. Addicted to lying to people. They can't tell anything that's truth. They have a hard time speaking to you without lying to you. And then they got to cover themselves up with another lie. Proverbs, the 14th chapter and verse 5 says, a faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. A man who is addicted to lying will continually lie to get out of a lie. He'll be noticed and he will be considered unfaithful. When you recognize that person that is a continual habitual liar, that is addicted to it, you don't want anything to do with him. He has made himself known. You can pick him out in a crowd anywhere, because of the way that he talks and the lies that he has. The second thing here is anger. The destructive results of anger can have negative results upon your family for generations to come. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that anger is the addiction, but it's very possible that the power that you might feel in exhibiting your anger to those around you may be what is addictive. You get the high from feeling powerful because you yell and scream and you get angry and you point fingers, and it makes people cower and it makes people bow to you. It makes people give in to your anger so that you get your way. Put away these things, Paul's teaching us. Anger may not be the addiction, but the feeling of the power through anger may be addictive. Stealing. The biggest tan hiding I ever got from my dad was when I stole a pocket knife from an old boy that we were at his house. Had it sitting up on the shelf right there at my level. I wanted a pocket knife. I knew I was old enough to have one, and it fit right in my pocket. I couldn't walk straight for a month, I don't think, after that. Well, that probably wasn't the truth there, but I did get a right good thrashing over that, and I had to go face that man with that pocket knife and give it back to him. The man who is addicted to stealing is selfish, only wanting things for himself, and that man will work so hard to plan out the next theft that he won't get caught at doing. And he is addicted to that rush that he has whenever he makes that pick, that pocket, whatever it might be, and he gets that reward through that. He's addicted to it. Paul tells us here, don't steal, but rather work. Work with your hands and do things that are good, that you may have something to give to someone else. It's not about being selfish for you. It's about giving to someone else. Don't steal. The last one I'm going to talk about in this text is let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. Filthy language is an addiction that is easy to fall prey to. And it is a tough one to overcome too, isn't it? I don't know, at some point in our lives, maybe all of us have had an issue with a little bit of filthy language. I know I did, and that was another one that I had to overcome along with the chewing tobacco. They kind of went hand in hand. And it's a tough one. If you have this problem, and you're hiding this problem, this addiction of filthy language, cussing, swearing, taking the Lord's name in vain, whatever it might be, talking mean about others, gossiping, guess what? The day is going to come that your tongue will slip and you have no longer hid your addiction. And if you're a Christian and you have a problem with your mouth and filthy language that comes out of it, you will be found out at some point in time. You will be found out. I believe that this sin and this addiction to me is probably the one that the Hebrew writer is referring to when he says, it is the sin that so easily ensnares us, captivates and captures us so easily. The vocabulary just becomes a way of life, flowing from us, no problem whatsoever. Swearing, cussing, saying those things we should not. Paul exhorts us in Titus, the second chapter, in the 8th verse, to have sound speech that cannot be condemned. If you have that filthy language coming out of you, there's condemnation that's going to come upon you. Filthy language will cause us to be recognized as just a regular old boy of the world, not standing aside, not being different, and not standing out as a Christian. You're going to fit right in. You're going to look just like everybody else, just by the way that you're talking. I've got an example of this, a biblical example. And that's in Mark 14. In Mark 14, verses 66 through 72, is the betrayal of Peter. Mark 14, starting 66. Now as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You were also with Jesus of Nazareth." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you are saying." And he went out to the porch, and the rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, "This is one of them." But he denied it again. And a little later, those who stood by said to Peter, "Surely you're one of them, for you're a Galilean, and your speech, your accent shows it." He began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak. He has now made himself just like one of them, just by his language." Second time the rooster crowed, Peter called to mind the word that Jesus had said before the rooster crows twice, "You will deny me three times." When he thought about it, he wept. Jeez, he just took and said the words that he should not have said that made him look just like anybody else in the world to prove that he was not of Christ. Is it any different for us then if we have filthy language coming out of our mouth on a daily basis? We look just like the world, not like Jesus. And it's addictive. And it's hard to overcome. There's no quicker way to lose our credibility as a Christian than to cuss and to say filthy things. So it looks like there in Ephesians that there's a few things listed that can become addictive to us. Things that we should overcome and put away. I'd like to go to Proverbs and focus on another topic of addiction. And that is in 23 verses 29 through 35. And I think that you could probably categorize more than one thing here, but I think it's specifically talking about drinking, alcoholism. So Proverbs 23 verses 29 through 25. Who has woe? Who has sorrows? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or one who lies on the top of the mast, saying, "They've struck me, but I was not hurt. They've beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink? When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?" The best way to overcome a hangover is to get up the next morning and drink a beer. I don't know how many times I've heard that from these guys that run around partying, carrying on all night long, letting their eyes get swollen, and having woes and having sorrows because the drug, alcohol, is a depressant. And you naturally feel yucky, I guess, whenever you get to this point. You have the woes and the sorrows, and then there's contentions, and there's complaints, and the mouth starts running, and then there's wounds without cause. How did I get hit on the head last night? Why is my arm broken? I got in this car wreck. Whatever it might be. All sorts of issues that come from the mixed drink and the wine. Do not look on it when it's red and sparkling in the cup, desiring it. It swirls smoothly. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and 23, Paul mentions the use of wine for medicinal purposes. Jesus' first miracle was changed water into wine. And the Bible speaks greatly on the importance of not being addicted or even being drunk with excess. So consider a few more scriptures here. Proverbs 20 and verse 1 says that wine is a mocker and strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. If you've ever been around somebody that has had a few too many drinks, their mouth gets to run and they get boisterous and they start saying things that they shouldn't say. And before you know it, they've gotten into a fight with somebody because they've said something about your mama or your sister or something like that. And they take it outside, roll around in the mud and the blood. And as Johnny Cash would have said in his song, "The Beer." It just doesn't make sense, does it? The addiction is there, and these guys and gals, whoever it might be, is continually drowning themselves to the extent that they don't have any self-control for what they say or what they do. Proverbs speaks about that. Strong drink is a brawler and wine is a mocker. Flip over to Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah 5 verses 11 and 12. Woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may follow intoxicating drink, who continue until night, till wine inflames them. The harp and the strings and the tambourine and the flute and the wine are in their feasts, but they do not regard the work of the Lord, nor consider the operation of His hands. Woe to those. Woe to those who follow that intoxicating drink. They get up, they plan, they actually meditate upon how they're going to spend their day following after their addiction of intoxicating drink. What are they focused on? It's not focused on serving God. It's not considering the operations of His hand whatsoever. It's about self and serving that idol of drink. Ephesians, the 5th chapter, verse 18 says, "Do not be drunk with wine, in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit." 1 Timothy 3:3 and 3:8 Whenever you're considering the qualifications for shepherds and deacons, they are not given to wine. And Titus 2 and verse 3 encourages the older women to set an example to the younger by not be given to much wine. Numerous times the Bible talks about the detriments of the drink. So we've talked a little bit about some things beyond the substance abuse. Now I'd like for us to consider the results of addiction. Turn with me to James 1 and chapter 15. Chapter 1, verse 15, excuse me. James 1:15 says, "Then when desire has conceived, it gives forth birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death." What began as a friendship, just a little nibble, what began as a friendship becomes an infatuation, and then a love affair, and eventually you are taken captive into a fatal attraction. Addictions start out just as a little habit, nothing big, and then just keeps continually snowballing until the possibility of death is there. Most addictions have negative results, and I guess I don't know if I can even think of an addiction that does not have a positive result in some manner, either physically or spiritually. Proverbs 26:11 says, "As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his own folly." Addictions cause us to act like fools, continually turning back to them over and over and over. Remember a young man that I used to work with, he liked to go and have his drinks. And every morning that he would get, if we were at a business meeting or something like that, I've got a headache. Why did I do that? Why? He said, "Alan, I wouldn't lay my thumb up here and take a hammer and deliberately hit that thumb with that hammer, would I?" I said, "No, I don't think you would do that." "Then why do I do this day in and day out?" He had a little problem. He was addicted to the alcohol. Guess what he did the next night? Right back at her again. Wished I had a hammer. I would have handed it to him on the way out the door. Purposefully doing things that you know are not right. Proverbs 26 and 27 says, "Whoever digs a pit will fall into it." I'm persuaded that having addiction will result in you being captured in your own pit and needing help to get out of it. Joseph couldn't get out of the pit after his brothers threw him in there. And we can't get out of those pits sometimes that we've dug and we've fallen into. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. Well, then how am I going to get out of it? How do I get over this? How do I get out of this pit of this addiction? Bill Cosby said, no, Bill Cosby, okay? "Decide you want it more than you are afraid of it." Decide you want it more than you are afraid of it. Have you ever talked to somebody that's wanting to quit smoking cigarettes? And one of the main reasons why they won't try to quit cigarettes is because they're scared to death what'll happen whenever they put those cigarettes in the garbage. Are they going to get mean? Are they going to lose sleep? Are they going to gain weight? Are they scared to death of not being with that addiction, not having that thing that they can lean upon, having that crutch? Turn with me to James 4 and verses 7 through 10. How am I going to get out of that pit? Decide, number one, that you want it more than you are afraid of. 7 through 10. "Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up." There's no doubt when you try to give up an addiction and you do away with that addiction, you're going to have mourning, you're going to have weeping, and you're going to have struggles whenever it comes to that. I don't know if you've ever heard of people have gone through detox because of an illegal drug addiction, and the pain and suffering that they go through whenever their body is cleansing themselves of that. Oh, it sounds horrible. Well, the Bible speaks of that. "Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to weeping and mourning, and your joy be turned to gloom." It's not going to be easy. But you've got to decide that you want it more than you are afraid of it, as Bill Cosby said. I think that's a good quote. And we have to recognize that the devil is using this addiction to pull you away from God. You've got to submit to God so that the devil will flee from you. And remember that whoever makes practicing of sin is of the devil. He's going to stick right there beside you as long as he can. He's going to tempt you, and he's going to try to make you go back to your old ways hundreds and hundreds of times. If you're going to give up an addiction, he's going to try even harder not to lose you because he wants you. He's got you already, and he don't want to lose you. And that's why it's so much more important to get closer to God every day of our lives. So decide that you want it and submit to God. How do I climb out of the pit? Secondly, remove yourself from the addiction. In 1 Peter 2, verse 11, it says, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. Romans chapter 13, 14 says, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. And then if you would turn over to 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, it says, therefore, since Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these things, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. Remove yourself from the addiction. It may mean that you've got to get some new friends. Just like Peter talks about here. They don't know, what's going on with Alan? Here, you want to chew? No, man, I can't. What's the matter with you? I'm trying to quit. Here, just one. It won't hurt you. Got to remove yourself from that addiction. Got to remove yourself from those friends. Because you can't tell me that those people who are continually doing those addictive things that you were used to aren't going to try to get you to do them with them again. Your old drinking, your old smoking, your old cussing, your old fornicating, stealing, chewing buddies are not going to be the best support group when it comes time to quitting. Get away from them. Fight or flight's going to have to come in, and I think we need to flight whenever it comes to getting away from our addictions. So number one, decide that you want to do it. Number two, remove yourself from the addiction. Number three, don't lose heart. It's hard, and it's tiring, and it gets old, really old. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18. Don't lose heart, because we have something greater and much better than the physical pleasures of this earth. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18 says, therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Giving up an addiction is going to be hard. After 16 years of quitting chew, there's not a day that goes by that I don't still have a desire for a dip. 16 years ago. Give me Thanksgiving dinner? Mm-mm. It's hard. It's an affliction that we have to endure, though, because it's a light affliction compared to the affliction that will come upon us if we continue in the sin that we have been dealing with for so long. But if we deal with that light affliction for this time period, there will be such a great and more abundant weight of glory that comes with overcoming those addictions. So decide you want it. Remove yourself from the addiction and don't lose heart. 1 Corinthians 10:13, very well known. No temptation has overcome to you overtaking you, except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Don't lose heart. God has given us ways to overcome these addictions, ways to overcome these problems that we have in our life. And then 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. I love the way Paul mentions in the context of addictions here. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful or expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. You know, there's all kinds of things that are legal in the United States that we can partake of and participate in. But are they good for us? That's where we have to make that decision. That's where we have to know in our heart what is right and what is wrong when it comes to God's will for us on this earth. We got to recognize those things and make that decision. It's my choice. Don't be brought under the power of any of them. Don't allow them to become idols and have control over your life. Lastly, don't lose heart, because 2 Corinthians 7:1 says, therefore, having these promises of a life eternal with God, promises of a blessing of the eternal happiness, because of these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Perfecting holiness through the cleansing of ourselves from all those filthy things that we can be a partaker in. Addictions are tough, and if you know somebody that's trying to overcome them, help them, because they do need the help. God's given us all drives and all desires in our physical bodies. It's our responsibility to control them and be filling ourselves with things that are pure and not bad. As Christians, we have an even higher calling to present ourselves spotless before God. And if we have an addiction, it is something that is taking us away from God and becoming an idol in our life. And if you have a desire to give up something that is controlling your life, seek wise counsel. Leave the old friends behind and look to Jesus for help. Sweep your spiritual house clean, but don't just leave it empty, because those seven spirits will come back later and want to fill you right back up with those bad things. And that devil is going to put temptations of those addictions before you. Make sure that that house is so full of God, there's no room for the devil even to knock. I pray that we've been encouraged this morning and see what the Word says about how we can control our bodies when it comes to addictions and recognize that there are things out there that are going to tempt us. And if you have a need this morning, you can't do this without Jesus. Only through Him. He was sent so that we could overcome these things. Why don't you make that known as we stand and sing? Or if you have an addiction that you need help with, let's talk about it and let's see what we can do to overcome them. Please stand if convenient and let's sing.